Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Man, you finally made it to this week.
That's right.
Man, it's tough sometimes.
Made it through the work week, and now you're listening.
Yeah, you're almost there. It's Friday. We're here hustling. We're doing our thing. Right. Thank you for being here. We appreciate your support.
Drinking a few Busch Lights.
If you would like to support us, you know, of course, we have sponsors that do support us and what we do and our free content and our hard work. But if you want to take it a step further, buy something from workingclassbowhunter.com. We have a lot of shirts. The Wage Brain shirts are up. Kill caps are coming back. We have a new patch hat in stock right now. All our infant beanies and like onesies and stuff like that are on sale currently.
We have women's tees now.
Yeah, we got a full-blown merch store. It's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool.
But best way to support us, go pick something up from there or check out our Patreon. We have three levels of Patreon, a $1, a $5, and a $10. Each one gets you something a little different. Just check that out. It's in the description of the podcast. We don't really push that too hard, but if you're interested.
But we do appreciate it.
Check it out. Yeah, yeah. We got a small, tight-knit community. We're going to be doing some shout-outs for some people on there here soon. And thank you for any extra support. But the podcast is brought to you by HHA Sports, Scent Crusher, Loophole Optics, Thermoseat, Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors, Elite Archery, Big Tine, Hunter's Blend Coffee, Old Barn Taxidermy, and Can Cooker has helped us cook up some tasty, tasty treats. So we are very appreciative of all our awesome partners, and we hope that you check them out and support them as well because they give a bunch of motherfuckers that say what they want on a hunting podcast and have brought it this far for however many episodes we've done. They are backing us, which means they're for the people. Because, right. Let's be honest, there's a lot of companies that told us no because we just say the word fuck.
Right. And told us to kick rocks.
Yeah. Fucking bullshit.
And you know what?
fucking hey, boys.
That's funny because, you know, the same people who told us that, they're doing the same thing in their hunting camps.
Yep, exactly.
It's just we don't need to sugarcoat it for the look of the industry.
No, we don't give a shit.
So, yeah, this beer's for you.
Hey, here it is. What it is.
That's right. That's right. Oh, you need a beer?
I'll take one.
This is Kurt Geyer talking. We have a guest host in this week, Wade.
The Wade Borman's here.
The Wade Borman.
It says on his driver's license, too.
It says on his driver's license.
And we got Eric Common.
We got Doug Schmidt.
All right.
The mustache.
Let's get on to the podcast.
Dougie, Dougie, Dougie.
Cue the intro.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody. It's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys. This is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bow Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Bachman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Hey, this is Jules McQueen, and you are listening to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast.
It's really, really not that good.
Good, 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 good.
All right, here we are, the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We are here with who I consider one of my good friends since sharing a recent hunting camp, bear hunting camp with, Ty Glenn. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, guys?
Well, thank you for doing this. This is a podcast that you sent me some photos of this buck. You called me, and I was all jacked up for you. And I was like, this is one we need to expedite ahead of schedule because it's so relevant to what's going on out west right now and so close to the time that you killed this animal that we just like doubled down on a night and got you in.
We're like, let's squeeze him in.
Yeah.
So then, I called Kurt and was like, dude, I got to tell you the story. And you're like, no, don't want to hear it. Don't say anything.
I was like, as rude as it sounds, I want to hear the story, but let's wait till we record because we're going to record.
You haven't heard it at all yet.
Nope. Honestly, that's the truth.
That's perfect.
He called
me
2 days ago and I said, can you record in 2 days? We're going to be in studio. We're just going to do it. Can you just tell me the story then? Like, I want to hear it, but I want to hear it organically on record.
You have a better reaction that way.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yep.
And I wouldn't ask as many questions if I knew the details. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, for sure.
So let's talk, man, because we met in bear camp. Didn't know you at all before. Maybe, you know, we talked online, on like on Instagram. We messaged back and forth, but like that was it before bear camp. But first person we met when we pulled into Wyoming at the little corner store there at the small town, you were the first dude to hop out of the truck, and we're like, "What's up, boys? Let's do this. Let's kill some bears." And that was the beginning of it all.
Yep, that was. Bear camp's awesome for that, for just guys being able to hang out and camp and get to know each other. You know,
exactly.
Deer hunting can be a little more hardcore at times where people aren't so open with each other.
Yeah, so. It's weird, isn't it? It's antlers and horns do that to people, huh?
Yeah, dude, I don't know. Sometimes I'm jealous of the guys who can just go out there and just, you know, hunt whatever deer in the woods and just spend time with, you know, buddies and stuff, and other times I love the part where it's getting wrapped up and obsessed with a certain animal, and, you know.
It's kind of your own game, like you're by yourself chasing it.
Yeah, diving deep.
For sure, yep.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Like, I just picked up a new farm this year with a couple of buddies, and I kind of had to tell them, like, hey, once I find a deer, like, I kind of do my thing. And and they're like, no, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, but it. Like, do you get, though, like, what I'm saying?
Do they really understand what you're saying?
I don't know. We'll find out. I probably won't get invited back.
It's a balancing act for sure, because I have, like, I got a couple really close friends, and then I have a bunch of people that are, like, acquaintances I talk with, and I do the same thing. I'll talk with them all year long, and then once the hunt starts getting close, I start my scouting. It's like I talk to hardly anyone because I don't want to have to lie to people. I don't want them to ask me questions, and then I have to lie, and then it's all, you know, and I don't want to lie. So it's like, I just go quiet. That way they don't know to ask me questions, and I don't have to lie. So
just go off the grid for a couple months.
And that's not your fault. That's other people's fault that you had to be that way, though, to a point.
Exactly.
But hey, Rook, before we start diving into deer, we were the kings of bear camp.
Dude. I miss that place so bad.
I do too. I'm so excited for Eric to experience it.
I know, I can't wait, man. I'm looking forward to it every day.
And I'm going to be chilling this year. Like, I'm just going to be
honestly
comfortable, you know?
It's so fun. I'm not even, I've told Devin and Easton, like, I'm not even going to hunt this year. I'm just going to come up there and, like, just, I don't know, experience it again and enjoy it with help everybody else. Try and get, you know, make sure everybody else has a bunch of success, but I just enjoyed it so much. The bear was just the icing on the cake.
100%. Yeah, I agree with that, man, because I'm kind of in the same mood. Like, I want to hunt again, of course. Like, I would like to kill a jet black bear now, but I'm not going to be upset if I don't, especially because the bear I killed this year was so amazing that I'd like to see Eric shoot a bear, and I'd like to see other people shoot bears in camp. That'll make it for me, but me killing a bear this year would be a bonus. Like, I'm kind of just I'm looking forward to the camaraderie and just, like, the getting away from cell phone service vibe of it all.
Just off the grid.
Especially right now. That sounds amazing.
So if I remember this,
you gotta go, Wade. We got a couple spots left for that bear hunt, by the way.
Do you really?
Yes.
I thought they were gone.
There's two spots left. If you want one, you need to book it, like,
I'm in.
Right fucking now.
I'll do it. I'm in.
Okay.
100%. Anyway, keep going.
So, Ty, if I remember right, are you the one that the reason why Clint almost broke his neck?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're the guy.
That's what I thought. You're that guy.
We talked about that story quite a few times on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm the one who slapped the horse. I wish you guys could have seen it.
Oh, man.
Oh, hearing Clint tell the story, you know how dramatic he is about it and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty well. The night I killed my bear, I didn't know it. And we've told this story before, but it's kind of a fun recap before we get into this. I killed my bear, pull back into camp, and Ty's back there, like, so jacked. He's like, "Dude, you gotta come see my bear." I'm like, "You shot a bear?" I'm like, "I shot a bear." And you're like, "No way! Oh my god!" Like, it was just the coolest night in camp, like, I've ever one of the coolest nights I've ever experienced in a hunting camp.
So fun.
It was fun, man.
Just the crazy thing, though. Like, I could see. I don't know you at all, Tyler, but or Ty, whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
Either way,
whatever your name is.
But I could just see Clint on that horse and just taking off, and him nose diving right into a snowbank for some reason.
Dude, I was crying. I was laughing so hard. Honestly, dude, it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
It was pretty Western.
It was awesome.
So, all right, man, a buck called Caitlin.
Yeah, You know, so
tell us about Caitlin.
Tell us the story.
Let's hear about Caitlin.
And I'll get to the name on it here in a minute, but essentially we've got this mountain range here in northern Utah that's it's open to your regular archery season, which is like a month long, and then after the month long archery hunt, it goes into an extended hunt that continues through the end of November. So essentially you've got like 4 months of hunting, 3.5 months of hunting on it. And in 2016, I believe, was the first year I see this deer. I called it like the Wasatch Whitetail because it looked a ton like a whitetail, like as much as a muley could look like a whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this nice 3-point, really willowy, nothing, you know, nothing special about the buck. And so I see him 16 and 17, and then in 18, he starts to get noticed by quite a bit of people because he's in an area that's like super high trafficked area. So there's a lot of hunters who know about this deer. And there's a local Instagram page, Hunt the Front, that actually did a little photo contest to see who had the best photos of this deer. And kind of ironic enough, I actually won the contest for best footage of this deer.
No kidding.
Sure you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure you did.
Sure you did.
So that year he's pushing, he's right around the 30-inch mark.
And for, you got to remember, you're talking to a strong whitetail audience.
Yeah.
So when you say 30-inch mark, you're talking about spread.
30-inch outside spread, yep.
Widest spread, outside spread, yeah.
Yep, outside spread, widest spread, 30 inches. But like I said, he's still kind of willowy, you know, doesn't have much mass. His tine length isn't very long. I think he's, I think that year the sheds, with just the guy who picked up the sheds, his name's Luke Holding, he kind of guessed the inside spread. He was in like the 150s,
mm-hmm.
just to give you guys an idea. And so I got a bunch of footage of him that year. And then going into 2019, we had a really hard winter that year, and antler growth was just garbage up here. And so 2019 was kind of a rough season. I just really didn't find anything I was super interested in. Kind of hunted a couple other bucks, and somebody on social media posted on their Instagram page a trail camera picture of this deer, and they had posted in the years past, they had posted pictures of him too. So they knew where he summered, but not wintered. And I was like, dang, that deer put on some size. Like I'm thinking the deer might be a 190 buck, and he's like 33 inches outside spread now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Let me ask you this, Ty, because you're seeing pictures of this buck on other people's Instagram pages. If that was in the Midwest, there'd be so much jealousy, like
bashing. You'd have 400 people trying to hunt that buck.
Well, you'd have that, but you'd have people bashing, people talking shit. It would just be a drama fest. Is it that way out there?
It hasn't. No, it really hasn't been too bad.
That's good to hear. That's inspiring a little bit.
It's refreshing, actually.
Least, yeah.
If they are saying anything, it's behind my back. You know, that. I haven't really heard anything.
It's behind your back.
Yeah. So I see these trail camera photos, and I'm like,
But you didn't have that jealous feeling. You see that deer. You know the deer. You weren't like, man, fuck these guys. That never crosses your mind in any percentage?
No, because in my mind, you know, we don't – and maybe it's – we don't have the private land
dilemma
that you guys deal with. It's all public land, and so my mindset instantly goes to like, well, like – screw these guys. If I want to kill that deer, I'm going to kill that. Like,
it's up to you.
I know I can make it happen. Yeah. And I'm really confident in my abilities and whatnot. And I know where the deer lives. And I just think, I know what that deer does better than anybody else because I spend more time watching deer around here than 95% of the guys.
Right. That's awesome, man. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
So I see this buck on a trail camera photo and he's in the velvet. It's like August photo. And I'm like, oh, cool. That's like he really blew up this year. And I didn't know where he summered, really. I kind of had an idea, but I didn't really know where he summered. And so I was like, as November gets closer, I'm just going to – and, you know, the rut goes on here in November, like mid-November. I'm like, I'm just going to keep an eye on that winter range where I've been seeing him. I don't know if I threw that out there, but every year when I was seeing him, it was in, like, January. That's when I was finding him in the hunts. 2 months closed by that point. So,
mm-hmm.
So November hits, and like I said, this deer normally comes down to this spot. He has to migrate down, you know, several thousand feet in elevation. It's like the start of November, maybe November 6th, and I get done hunting for the morning. I'm headed home, and as I'm driving through the area, I pull over, and you can glass this little winter range section from the road, and so I pull over, and I throw my spotting scope up on the window. And literally, like, the second my spotting scope stands still from setting it up on my window, that deer's in the center of it. I'm like, holy crap. Like,
well, what are the odds of that?
He's, you know, he's in the, I think, low 90s, 33 inches wide. I'm watching him. He's on this face by himself. He's kind of feeding across the side hill. And so I'm, like, trying to watch him for a minute to get an idea of what this deer's doing before I make the play. I've got my bow. I've got everything in the back of my truck. So I'm watching him, and he kind of feeds across this side hill, and he gets up onto this ridge line. And I'm like, okay, he's going to cross that ridge. I need to move my car to get eyes on him when he goes over it. And as I drive around the other side, there's two hunters coming out of the bottom, and they see this deer, and they start moving straight for him. And long story short, they blow the deer out of there. And I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, oh, well, like, I'll pick him back up. So I end up spending every... Dude, I was
God bless
so him. Kicked. So I end up spending every day in November last year, every single day I was glassing that area looking for that buck, you know. Sometimes it was in the morning before work. Sometimes I'd pop in middle of the day. I've got, you know, I'm a rep for work, and so I'd driving around the valley all the time, or Salt Lake County all the time. And
oh, so you just happen to go that way every day yeah. to work? Huh?
Happen yeah, to be like in the every, area.
Every day, I happen to have an account over there that right. I see every day.
Air quotes heavy here.
So I'm looking for this deer, and I can't find him. And now I'm like starting to hike up the mountain and get all different kinds of angles into this area. Can't find him. I've got a really good buddy, one of my best hunting buddies. He calls me on the second to last day of the hunt, and I'm around the other side of the mountain looking, and he calls me and he goes, dude, get your ass over here. I've got him. And he's bedding down. And I'm like, holy crap. So I haul ass over there. I get over there and I pull up next to him. I set my glass up, and he's literally digging out of bed and beds down. So I sit there, look at the mountain for a little bit, and I'm like, dude, I think I can make a play on him. Like, I think I can come in from this south side of him. He's on one side of a little ravine, and it's like super thick scrub oak where he's bedded. But I'm like, I'll creep in there, and then, you know, if I need to, I'll wait for him to get up and move or, you know, whatever. And so I work up the mountain. I do like the stalk of my life, and I close the gap, and I get into, you know, archery distance, and I've got this perfect window in the scrub oak where all I can see is from his vitals forward. And there's a bunch of branches that I know if I miss, and the branches are like 10 yards in front of him. So I'm like, I can't miss back because it'll hit those branches and just deflect into Neverland. I can't miss forward because he's also got branches kind of in front of his face. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to take this shot. I'm dead calm. Come to full draw, I release an arrow, it hammers him, he blows out of bed, doing, you know, Mach 1000. There's, I'll have to...
He broke the sound barrier.
Oh, dude, he was hauling ass.
What was that?
And,
whoa! Holy shit!
Goddamn flash.
Everybody in the valley's looking up there, like, what was that noise?
Yeah.
Yes. So I wait for my buddy and his dad to hike up to where I'm at, and literally the second they get up to me, like this wall of like clouds just hits us. Visibility's now like maybe 50 feet, and snow flurries are kind of starting to fall.
Oh no!
And I'm like, oh no! And so we hop on the blood trail.
For our Midwestern listeners, weather's different out west.
Is it?
I think it is. I think when a storm, from my minimal experience, like when you can be up in the hills or the mountains, and when it comes hard. Like it hits you. I think it hits you faster there.
It literally, like I could kind of see it coming out across the valley, but I didn't know. You know, we also deal with a lot of inversion out here in the winter, like smog, and just because we've got these mountains basically trapping all the bad air into the valley, and then just With how the cold
I just have experience from being in the mountains in Colorado, and you're like, it's sunny, and then you just get hit with rain out of nowhere, and you're like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yep, that exactly. Yep. So I didn't even anticipate this, but this storm hits, and so I'm like, all right, we got to hop on the Blood. It's been, you know, maybe 45 minutes waiting for them to hike up to me anyways. And so they get up to me and we hop on the Blood, and it's really good blood. And he's headed straight downhill, and my buddy's, you know, slapping my back, and like, he's all pumped. He's like, dude, you crushed him, you know, like all excited. And I'm kind of being like cautiously optimistic. I'm like, well, let's see what's at the end of this blood trail, you know? And so I follow the blood trail. He goes down like 200 yards downhill. And then he turns and starts going side hill, and he goes like 100 yards side hill. Now I've gone like 300 yards, and I'm like, oh, this is like, I don't like that. You know, yeah. It's not good when they go more than a couple hundred yards. And then he turns and starts going straight uphill. And
Not good.
I'm trying to stay on his tracks because I'm thinking that I may have hit him good enough that it's going to kill him, but not instantly. And I've got this storm that's now dumping heavy snow, and I'm like, I've got to stay on his tracks. And so I end up following his tracks 2,700 vertical feet over a mile and a half.
Because usually when they go uphill, they pump that out, and usually that's when they...
Dude, he was bedding a ton. He would go like 100 yards bed down, 100 yards bed down. Even though he knew I was the one bumping him out of his bed. So I'm like, dude, this deer seriously hurt if he keeps bedding down knowing that I'm right on it.
But I mean, that's a good thing too, though. You keep bumping him. I mean, you're pushing that blood out of him.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking at the time too, is I'm thinking,
yeah, but that could be hit. Bad too.
Especially not to worry about neighboring properties and shit out in that area.
Yeah, but the weather, what else do you do?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is we're now getting a bunch of snow. Like, this blood's lost as soon as I back off his trail. So I end up following until I get up, you know, like I said, about a mile and a half. And at this point, I've been sweating like crazy. It's freezing. The wind is blowing like 30, 40 miles an hour up on top of this mountain. I honestly am feeling like I'm getting hypothermic. I sound like a pussy, but, dude, I was honestly starting to get a little concerned for myself. And so I follow him to where he crosses over a ridge, and I drop a pin on Onyx, and I pull off the mountain. I go home, don't get shit for sleep. It snows all night long, and I get to the trailhead at about like 10:30 the next morning. It's still snowing. I sit in my truck for about an hour, and then it breaks, and it's like bluebird skies. So it's 11:30 now. I go up with the same buddy and his dad, and I send them up the opposite side of the canyon to glass for me, to kind of put eyes back onto the same side of the hill that I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
I get up to where I left my pin, and sure as shit, where he had crossed the ridge, he bedded down like 50 yards on the other side. And so I'm like, I bump him out of his bed. He takes off. And I'm like ready to flush myself down the toilet. I call them, and at this point they finally can get a good visual on where I hit him. And I basically hit him high and forward. So I'm just on the front edge of the shoulder. And I felt like with where I hit, 2 inches back and I'm in the lungs, or 2 inches low and I'm in the lungs. It's just a touch high, a touch forward. And when he blew out of the bed, he's now in belly deep snow, and he's covering ground pretty good, to where they were like, dude, I don't think he's... You know, I don't know that this is going to kill him.
I don't know if you've heard this. I don't know this term. In the Midwest, they call that for bow hunters. A lot of times, they call that no man's land.
Yep. I was in the center of no man's land.
Is that a term they use out west?
Yep, they use that out here too.
Okay, yep. I was just curious. I didn't know.
Not a place you want to be.
No, definitely not. But you get blood, and it's encouraging to trail a deer that's hit there, because you see all the things you want. It gives you hope of continuing a trail, is what that gives you.
Yeah, and when I've seen no man's land hit before, usually after, you know, 300-400 yards, like, blood comes to you, you're looking for specks.
Drops, right?
And maybe because,
Yeah,
and maybe because I was in the snow, I was seeing more blood than what you would have seen on dry ground, but I just felt like, man, this... And I'll have to post up some pictures of the blood trail. I got tons of pictures of it. But it was like, how is it possible for a deer to bleed this much over a mile and a half? and still survive.
In no man's land, they don't bed that much either.
That's a good point.
That's weird. That's what was so bizarre.
Run. Yeah.
So when you're talking to snow, are you talking like a couple inches, 10 inches, a foot?
So the day that I hit him, before that storm hit, there was like 6 inches on the ground.
Already.
And then that storm dropped about another foot.
Oh, shit.
So, 18 inches of snow.
In the mountains.
And so when I kicked him out of that bed. Yeah, and so can you imagine hiking in 18 inches of snow covering 2,700 feet of elevation gain?
Downhill.
I would die.
On a sled.
Downhill on a sled.
Give me a toboggan, I'm down.
Catch him real fast.
Give me a tube.
Yes.
For a Midwestern guy that drinks tons of Bush Light, no, I can't imagine that.
I can't even climb a hill with that shit.
I can't walk in normal grass.
Yeah, it was brutal. So I get up there, I bump him, they're telling me, he looks like he looks good. So it's now, this is the last day of the hunt. I'm like, I'm not going to continue to push him. I pull off the mountain. I call the Division of Wildlife Resources down here. I let them know, hey, I hit a buck. I'm going to continue to watch this mountain. And if I find him, do I just call, trying to figure out the process that,
yeah.
And they say, yeah, call us. We'll need to come investigate it. Make sure you're taking pictures with a timestamp before the hunt ends of blood so that we know that, that correlates with the whole story and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I'm up there for the next 2 weeks. I can't find this deer, dude. I'm looking everywhere and cannot glass him up. And I'm like, this is his winter home. Like, this is where he should be. And once again, my buddy Hank, he's up there glassing and he sees these two little bucks and a doe come over a little finger ridge. And doesn't think much of it, keeps glassing up other areas. And then he's like, man, that doe was like twice the size of those two bucks. So he spins his spotting scope back over onto it. And he's like, dude, that doe's got a dick. And then he's like, well, that doe has pedicles, like antler pedicles. And then it finally turns and he can see its left shoulder. And he's like, whoa, there is a big scab on its shoulder. So the deer out here normally don't shed their antlers until like February.
Yeah,
we're in the first week of December, and this deer's already shed its antlers.
Interesting.
So he gets some really good footage, and I take some really good footage I used to have, and we compare it, and it's like the exact same facial markings, like it's and then obviously the giant scab, and it's living right where he's lived every other winter.
Yeah.
And so that's where the name Caitlin stemmed from. I'm like, dude, this old man just went through a sex change. just like Bruce Jenner did. So
it is what it is.
So Caitlin seemed fitting. So A buck called Caitlin. And then, I end up watching that deer until March. March 15th is the last photo I have of him. You can see the scar on his shoulder. He ends up, from there he probably took off to his summer home. I grid the ever-loving piss out of that mountain like 10 times.
Well, good for you, man, for putting in the extra effort to find this animal and recover.
The extra effort.
Oh, dude.
Definitely.
A lot of people gave up a long time ago.
And it shows you've done your homework that you can see when a buck is shed. And then also give him a stellar nickname by Caitlin, like he deserves. You know? He said, I'm sex changing so nobody chases me for the rest of the year.
He's like, I'm done.
Dude, seriously. And I mean, when you have that much history with a deer, it just we also have an elk hunt that goes, it's an extended elk hunt that goes from December 1st to December 15th. So it starts the day or it continues 2 weeks beyond the deer season. And I was actually really looking forward to this year hunting elk in the snow. And I was so sick over the deer that I didn't even once go chase elk. Like I was just, I put my bow down for the year. Dude, I started thinking, should I be a bow hunter? Like what am I, just the lowest of lows.
Yes. Going up to that dark down depression phase.
The dark arts.
Where that's all the symptoms of.
I don't deserve a bow hunt anymore.
A bow hunter that cares.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds fucked up, but
it can ruin you.
That you want people that are, I don't know how to word this. You want people who are affected by that emotion to be the bow hunters because they care about the shots they make.
And they have empathy for the game that they're chasing.
Exactly.
Empathy.
Yep.
Word of the week, so, empathy. But anyway, so
I grid this mountain apart looking for his sheds. I call a couple local guys who, one of them has picked up his 2018 sheds, and I'm like, hey, dude, if you see anybody on social media who comes across his sheds, like, I'd be interested in buying them. Keep your eyes out. And then there's a bunch of other people who, it's funny, I see posts on Instagram, like, sure miss seeing this deer on the winter range. Like, they assume he's dead.
Oh, and
I'm like, that's not a bad thing, because now they're not going to be looking for him next year, and I know he's alive.
Yeah, yeah.
So
interesting.
I'm kind of taking some pros out of this too. So, you know, wow. You fast forward a little bit. In May, the draw results come out in Utah, and I've got a handful of buddies who've hunted this deer in the summer home that have run trail cameras and have got them on trail cameras. And so one of them posts on Instagram that he didn't draw an archery tag in the state of Utah at all. And he's got this deer on trail camera the last like 3 years. And so I call him up, and at this point we're just kind of like acquaintances. I've become really tight with him this year, but I call this kid Chris Applegate, and I was like, dude, I know this is like your hunting area. You know, this is, you've been hunting it for years. I'm going to be in the area, because I have an idea on where this deer lives. I'm like, I'm going to be in that area, but I would really appreciate it if you helped me a little bit. And once I get this deer killed, I'll never step foot into that area again. I'll leave it for you. And he's like, super cool. He's like, yeah, dude, let's go up. So we plan a day and we go up there, and he's like, hang a camera here, hang a camera here, hang a camera here. Like, literally spends an entire day helping me.
And that's super cool, man. You don't see that very often. No, you would not see that
in dude. Iowa.
I expected him to tell you to kick rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, so did I, to be honest.
But this goes back.
Anywhere in the Midwest, they tell you to fuck off.
I just, did I not just talk about 100%. This whitetail political stuff? Oh, yes. It's different out west. Yes. I feel it's different. People are, because it's everyone's ground out west.
Right, right.
Yep. Yeah, so like I said, I really didn't expect him to. So there's a few big breaks like in this hunt, and that is one of them. So
shout out to that guy, man.
Yeah.
That's a real OG right there.
Yeah. Huge shout out to him. So he takes me up there, but the crazy thing is I set those cameras up in like mid-June. It's like as soon as the snow is out up there, I get cameras up there.
June, the snow's out. It's funny.
Oh, dude, there's some pockets that the snow doesn't leave until, like, end of July, beginning of August.
That's fucking crazy.
Like right now.
Avalanche. I love it. It's avalanche like shoots and shit.
It's like 112 degrees here in August.
Oh, dude. Yeah, and the high up there is like 80. So it's a little cooler up high. But the summer's going by, and I'm checking the cameras. I'm shuffling cameras. I've got, like, 7 different game cameras up there, and I cannot freaking find this deer, dude. And starting to panic a little bit, but like still realizing I've got plenty of time. And I've always said it about this hunt, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Like, you got to get out of your own head. You can't get all spun up. There's so much time, you just got to be patient. So I end up mid-July, I'm up there glassing one day, and I freaking glass this deer up, and I'm like, holy shit. and not just that, so 16, 17, and 18, he was just a big 3-point or a 3x3. You guys would call it a 6. Well, you guys count the eye guards too, so you'd call it like an 8-point.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a 3x3 in 16, 17, 18. And then in 2019, he ends up putting some back forks on, and he's got a little inline off his main beam, so he's a 4x5. Well, this year, he's gone back to his 3x3 mainframe, and then he's got an inline on his G4 and an inline on his main beam. So he's a 3x5 for us. But I'm like, dude, that deer's pushing 40 inches wide. It's the widest deer I've ever seen.
So backing up just a little bit, this may be a dumb question, but that high up in the mountains, do cell cameras work?
Oh, so we're going to get to that here in 2 seconds.
Okay.
Good question, Eric.
I don't know anything about the fucking mountains.
Solid question.
Premature Eric.
Yeah, there's a lot of areas that cell cameras don't work, but we also have some ski resorts in the area. And if you're anywhere if you're in a canyon that's got a ski resort, there's cell service up there.
Okay, okay.
That there's money sense. There, that's why.
Yeah. They have a cell tower there. Yeah.
Exactly. So I...
pro tip.
I finally find this deer. I take a bunch of phone scope footage of him. I'm not telling anybody about it. I've got like two buddies that I'm talking to. One of them doesn't have a tag, and the other one's like in... well, I got like three buddies. Hank, I had to clue. Well, I've got 20 buddies that I'm talking to. I'm so what? No.
It's good to know people.
So, Hank, I had to tell him because, you know, he's been involved in the whole drama of this
Shout out
year.
To Hank. What's up, Hank?
Yeah. So, Hank and then, you know, Chris Applegate, who's been helping me out, doesn't have a tag. And then another buddy who hunts southern Utah. And he's like, dude, that deer's 40 inches wide. Like, that's a once-in-a-lifetime type buck. Like, you'll probably never hunt a deer that wide again. And so now there's even more pressure added to the pressure of I just want to kill this deer for the sake of closing that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I continue to glass him up a couple more times, and I on this this mountain that he lived on, there's like a little drainage or a little ravine that comes off the mountain, and about mid-mountain, which is like it's really low, these deer tend to hang out towards the peaks. And he's hanging out like mid-mountain, and he's going into this little patch of quakies every day.
Quakies?
What the hell is a quakie?
aspen trees.
Oh, okay.
Quaking aspens. So they call them quakies or aspens.
You tell us an aspen, by the way, it is.
Okay, that's how we know.
The Nietzsche rock.
So he goes into these, he's like super frequent to these quakies, but he's going in like, dude, in the gray light of the morning, like so early, I can't even zoom my spotting scope in to see him. I have to put my phone scope adapter on my phone, and then my phone is actually, the camera on my phone is actually compensating for the low light to let me see what buck it is.
Interesting. So
he's entering well before sunrise. It's like literally just light enough to start using your spotting scope. So I'm feeling really good that he's mid-mountain. You know, not a lot of guys are going to maybe glass him up there. The nearest vantage point is like a mile away. And so I'm glassing him from a mile away in this gray light using my phone to compensate. And so I'm kind of feeling really good about him going in there. And so one day I follow him into those quakies that morning, and I strap a cell camera So I strap a cell. I had this cell camera on the other side of the mountain, and I guess to back up a little bit, I'd been all the cameras Chris Applegate had me hang were on the other side of the mountain. And so when I found him and I'm starting to watch him, I'm calling him like really puzzled, like, dude, why is he on this side of the mountain? He's supposed to be on the other side of the mountain, and the other side of the mountain, there's way more timber over there. And so I felt better, like he wouldn't get shot on the other side.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So is this kind of weird behavior for this time of the year for this buck?
It was weird, and what I ended up boiling it down to, you know, talking to, he kept saying, dude, if the deer gets pressure, like once hunting pressure starts, that deer will end up on the other side of the mountain as soon as pressure gets there. And so this is kind of, I don't know if this is the most, it's kind of shitty of me, but I'm like, well, If pressure is what's going to put him on the other side of the mountain, I'm going to give him some pressure right now. So I go over there one day. He goes into that little patch of quakies, and I go over there and kick his ass out. I follow him into the quakies, and I blow him out, yeah.
Because do you want him on the other side of the mountain, or do you want him where he's at?
I feel like I can still hunt him on the other side of the mountain, but a lot of other hunters are going to be a huge disadvantage because you can't really glass the other side of the mountain. It's all timbered.
Gotcha. Solid game plan.
So,
yep.
That's an experienced move, sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
so
cocky,
I go over
as
there.
Chandler would say.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking it's kind of an asshole move for, like, other hunters. I'm in there shaking shit up before the hunt starts, you know, so.
Yeah, but no other hunter would do that.
You're doing homework.
I'm obsessed.
You met Austin Chandler in bear camp. One of his favorite things, like, if he was on this show, he'd be like, that's cocky. That's like his saying, you know.
I like it. So I go over there, I bump him. 2 days later, he's back in the same spot, and I'm like, this son of a bitch. So I go over there, and I bump him again. And 2 days later, he's back in the same spot. So he'd go nocturnal for like a day, and then he'd be back there. And so after the second time doing it, I just kind of started thinking like, okay, let's sit back and reevaluate. Like, clearly he likes to be there for a reason. He's not going to the other side of the mountain. And what I ended up kind of chalking it up to was, have you guys ever heard the term like big bucks have small homes?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Very common out here.
So running my cameras this summer, I had them literally around this entire peak on both sides of the mountain. And I noticed that a lot of the little bucks, like the maybe 3-year-old deer, 2-year-old deer, I would get them on every one of my cameras. And it's like a, you know, mile and a half loop. And I would get them on all my cameras. But him, I was just seeing in this one little spot. And so I was kind of thinking, well, when Chris Applegate was getting them on those other cameras, he was a younger, that was 16, 17, and 18. He would have been a younger buck. I wonder if he used to circle the mountain just like these younger deer are, but now that he's gained a couple more years, his home's shrank, and he's clearly partial to this little patch of Quakies. So I've tried bumping him twice. He's not doing it. He's still living in this little patch. So I go over to the other side of the mountain one day, and I pull a cell camera that I put over there, and I bring it over, and I strap it on in this little patch of Quakies.
Next to the ski resort.
No,
got cell service
to the ski lift there.
So pro tip, hunt next to ski resort.
Yeah, take the ski lift.
He straps around the ski lift.
It's actually I strap this cell camera in there, and the deer is, all of a sudden he's on it like every freaking day. Like, and we're probably, I don't know, maybe August 5th is when I put it up. So hunt starts August 15th, so I put it up like 10 days before. Oof. And all of a sudden this deer is like on it every single night. He's coming by this camera as he's coming out onto like this feeding face, like this big open area outside of the timber that's like a big feeding area. And so he's hitting it every night between like 8:45 and 9:15. So he's coming out of the timber like literally right at last light. But he's super consistent around that time. And so he does that. He does that, you know, from August 5th to August 15th. So you fast forward a little bit. I pack my camp in, get camp set up. Opening morning hits. I get out of my tent at like, I don't know, 4 a.m. I'm camped up on the mountain because it's a few miles in there. And walk out onto the ridge. My cell phone, so the cell camera is Verizon. My cell phone is AT&T. Get out onto the ridge where I have cell service. I check the camera. He's not on it. I'm like, okay, cool. It's going to be clear to drop into these Quakies. I've set a tree stand in there on the game trail. I'm doing this whitetail style.
That's awesome.
The undergrowth, or not the undergrowth, but like that feeding face is just, you know, it's tall enough brush that there'd be times when I'd be glassing him that he'd walk behind brush and he'd disappear in plain sight. And then he'd take a couple steps and he'd be back out in the open. And so I knew spot and stalk in there was going to be super hard with how tall that, you know, getting a clear shot at him. And I also knew that the feed tends to burn up about mid-August. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to get just crunchier than hell.
Smart man.
So I hang this tree stand in there.
Which is not very common out there, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I was like, this is not normal.
Like, do they even sell tree stands out there?
Dude, I tried to buy. I was gonna go buy like a decent tree stand, like one that that's got the.
Don't name drop. We don't want a name drop.
Well, I don't even have a name. It's just got like a seat.
I'm sure something I saw, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, definitely.
You bought off my website.
Yeah, for sure,
guaranteed.
You know the kind that has the backrest, like it's an actual seat, like a stadium seat you would sit in almost.
Yep. I know exactly.
I don't know what they call them.
But you had it.
Like that? No, well, that's the kind I
that's
want.
That's a ski lift.
It's a ski lift.
It's a ski lift.
So I couldn't find a ladder tall enough to get into the ski lift. So
no. So you improvised and teleported.
I improvised. Well, I'm trying to find one of these tree stands, and I can't even find one locally. So I end up taking one I've got out in my shed that's some like shitty little – the actual seat portion of it's like 10 inches wide. I find some foam – the seat's been chewed up by squirrels, so I get some little foam thing to say. It's a crap stand. I hang that up on the... yeah, it works. So I hang it on his game trail that he's using. I go in and I sit. So I get out of my tent. I check. He's not on there. And there's freaking headlamps everywhere, dude. Like, everywhere. Guys are just crawling all over the hills. And I'm like, oh, shit. This is... I'm in here a ways. I thought there'd be some hunting pressure, but I didn't think it'd be this bad. There's literally guys everywhere. And so I hike out, I get in the stand, opening morning comes by, I climb out of the stand, I head back up to camp. I get a phone call from my buddy Hank while I'm sitting in the stand. He just shot a 200-inch buck opening morning. Yeah, so I pull out of there, I go over, I spend the middle of the day helping him get his deer out, and then I head back in for the evening. I sit the evening, and then Sunday morning... He hasn't been on the camera, by the way. Sunday morning, I wake up. I check the, you know, my stealth cam app. The buck hasn't been on. He hasn't come by the stand yet. So I'm like, shit. Like, have I just been putting too much of my own scent in there? Like, I'm new to this whole tree stand thing. And so I'm, like, asking myself all these questions. And I end up deciding Sunday morning not to go sit the stand because, like I said, I didn't know if it was me or if it's the other guys that are crawling all over, just putting a ton of pressure on the area. But I don't go sit Sunday morning, and then I come down, spend the day with my family. I go back up. I go in, and I sit Sunday night. Sunday night, I actually have a freaking stud buck come by, you know, 60 yards, cutting across this little hillside, feeding. No idea I'm there. He's pushing 30 inches wide. He's got, like, five kickers. Probably a 180 type, 180 inch type buck, and I freaking pass him. Oof. And
ouch.
My wife's like, I don't think any prior year you would have passed that deer. And I'm like, I'm freaking killing Caitlin. Like, I've never been
sounds so bad. Sounds so bad,
Caitlin.
Though.
Caitlin needs to die.
Caitlin needs to die. So let's see. Then,
because Caitlin had to die. The Dixie Chicks
Monday
song
comes.
All of a sudden.
Earl.
That, oh, now I know yeah. a song you're singing.
Fuck the Dixie Chicks, by the way.
Yeah.
Not literally, so just the chicks, metaphorically.
Too short for me. It looked weird.
Sorry, Ty.
Yeah.
You're good.
That's what we do here.
So
hit that dirt.
It's a private ski resort right now, anyway.
Yeah. So Monday morning comes around. I go to a work meeting Monday morning. I get back up there Monday night. I sit the stand Monday night. And he comes in at noon on Monday.
No kidding.
Good. Middle of the freaking day. He feeds through. And I'm like, you've got, like, this deer is trying to take my soul. Like, it's
he's fucking
trying
with you.
To ruin me. Oh, he's fucking with me. But I know he's still in the area. He's still alive. So I'm still a little optimistic. Tuesday comes around. At this point, I'm talking to my wife, and I'm like, you know, this deer's trying to ruin me. I go up. I sit Tuesday night. I get out of the stand Tuesday night. He doesn't come through. And I get back up onto the ridge where my camp is, and my AT&T has cell service. And he freaking feeds by at 9:15. So I get out of the stand at 8:45 because it's too dark to shoot. He comes by at 9:15, and I'm like, he's literally just trying to rub it in. Like, this deer's... So I'm...
And that's the only bad thing about cell cameras right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll drive you nuts. Frustration.
They drive you freaking up the wall.
But I think it helps in this regard. So... I get home Tuesday night. By the time I get home, it's like 11 o'clock at night, and I'm freaking distraught that this thing just walked by my camera 30 minutes after I got out of the stand. And so I'm sitting there talking to my wife, and she's like, with him hitting middle of the day Monday, she's like, you just need to go, and you need to start sitting that stand from sun up to sundown from here on out.
Yeah, I was thinking that when you were talking.
Whitetail rut style.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, dude, that is going to be miserable with the summer daylight hours. But, like, I think you're right. But at the same time, I'm also in my head, I'm like, I don't want to burn, because this hunt's 3.5 months. I don't want to burn my wife out, like, right out of the gate. And I'm like, she doesn't realize, like, how long this could potentially go on.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to take her advice anyways. And so I tell her, well, I can't just go with my work. I can't go radio silence. And I don't have cell service with my AT&T in there. And so I'm like, I don't know what to do. And she says, well, go switch our phones to Verizon then. So I'm like, okay.
No way.
So
she knows you're dedicated to
your
this.
Your wife is a fucking OG.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to your wife.
Yeah.
She is a champ, man.
Shout out to your wife.
So I tell her, I'm like, okay, Wednesday morning, I got to mow the lawn because it's getting ridiculous. I got to mow the lawn.
Shout out to you.
I got to switch the phones. And she goes,
do the dishes, make dinner, you know.
Fold the laundry.
She says, no, the lawn can be mowed later. Just switch the phones and get on the mountain.
Oh, shout out to your wife again.
She is a saint.
Hey, I retract the shout out to you, Ty, and shout out to your wife again.
Hey, as long as you're paying the membership fee of the ski resort, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Is your wife named
Caitlin?
Season
pass is good in the summer. So Wednesday morning, I go and I switch my phones to Verizon. And I get up there.
That's such an OG move.
Dude,
this story is forever.
Yeah, for
it doesn't ever end.
Dude, you need to write a fucking book about this story.
I've like been engaged the whole time, though. I'm like, damn, so it's just phone service? Like, I'm into the whole thing.
Aren't you glad you waited for this story?
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad.
Oh, this is epic.
Yeah, this is way. Okay, so your wife's an OG. She must be really good looking.
You switch phones to companies. Like, what the hell?
She must be like a 12.
Oh, I bet she's a 12.
Either that or she's got a boyfriend I don't know about.
Hey,
ooh, I didn't think about that.
Either
at the ski resort, probably.
Either way, she's still up now.
If she's cutting you these kind of deals, worth it.
Yeah. So, well, I'm honestly thinking, too, like, where is she going with this? Because usually there's something she... Like, does she want a bigger house? Does she want, like...
Maybe she's got two phones.
There's always something on the end of this deal.
Yeah. So I go and I switch my phones. I get up there and I climb into the stand. It's like 11 a.m. And can I just also side note that sitting tree stands is so intense. Like, so intense. I honestly, going all my deer prior have been spot and stalk. And spot and stalk, it's usually like a few-hour process. You have all this time to, like, get your head around what you're doing. Like, when I shot Caitlin the year prior, I was ice cold when I made the shot because, like, I'd already gone through it in my head 10 times.
Caitlin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So now, fast forward, and now that I'm sitting in the stand, I'd hear a squirrel in the bushes, and I can hear my heartbeat in my ears, like, thinking of ears.
Every time.
So bad. I'm like, dude, this is like going from smoking pot to shooting up heroin.
Hey, when you come out to the Midwest trying to shoot a whitetail, it's the exact same experience. So
you're on your phone, you look up, and there's a deer standing right in front of you. You don't even hear him come in.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's so intense. So Wednesday, I'm sitting in the stand, and I'm, you know, it's now like, I don't know, 5:59. I'm sitting there and just bored as hell. I'm tired of sitting on this crappy little tree stand that I have. So I stand up and I'm leaning up against the tree. If you can imagine, I'm leaning up against it with my right shoulder and I'm looking down. I'm in the gut of a ravine and I'm looking down the ravine and a buddy sends me a video of him shooting a cow elk from opening weekend. And so I pull it up on my phone and I'm watching him shoot this cow, and it's only like a 20-second clip. And so it finishes, and I go to rewatch it again. And before I do that, I just do a kind of little look around, and I look up, and he's at 20 yards.
Oh.
Coming straight up the gut of the ravine, dude.
Oh, God.
And I'm literally, like, besides myself, like, you know, huge adrenaline dump. I slide my phone into my pocket. He steps behind, there's like three quakey trees that are all lined up that create like a little 3-foot wide wall. So his head's behind it. So I kind of hurry and I spin. So I'm facing straight forward and I pick my bow off the little bow hanger and, you know, knock my release or clip my release on. And he ends up walking under the tree at like 2 yards from the base of the tree I'm in. And I'm freaking like, my legs are shaking so bad. I'm like, do I think I can get away with sitting down? Because I almost feel like I need to, like, to eliminate shaking, sit yeah. like sit down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, what? No, you just got to get your shit together. Like, you're not going to risk getting blown so you can have a seat, Ty. Like, you're
pull it together.
Good. Yeah. So he comes up past me. He hits this trail. And I've already, you know, obviously I've range find a bunch of different spots in there. And so he's at 15 yards. He turns and he's facing like straight quartering away. And I freaking draw back my bow. He's still looking like what would be straight ahead for him. Has no idea I'm there. I'm at full draw. I line my peep and my sight house up. I put the pin like I actually, because I'm 15 yards, I think maybe I should aim, you know, 2 inches lower than I want to hit, just because I'm at closer than 20 yards and my pin is at 20. It's a 20 yard pin.
Yeah.
So I put it right where I want it and I freaking squeeze it off and it just hammers, dude, like that hollow watermelon thump.
Yep. Yeah. And the back. He does diaphragm exhale.
Oh, dude. So he does a 180 and shoots out of there like a freaking banshee, dude, just blows out of there. And I'm left standing in the tree, like with the biggest adrenaline dump I've ever had in my life. I feel like I'm going to pass out. My whole body's like tingly and going numb. And I'm like, what in the hell just happened? And so I climb out of the tree. I just slip out of that stand. I go the opposite way. I slip out of the stand of trees. I get up onto the ridge line where my camp is. And I
call
a couple buddies. Yeah, change my pants. Call a couple buddies, and I call Hank, and I call I called a few guys, but Hank and James were able to come up in there. James Yates able to come up in there and help me, you know, recover this deer. And I, those guys were so involved that I wanted them to like experience walking up on this deer with me, you know. So I meet them. We hike up in, and by the time it took them to drive up the canyon, hike in, all of this, it's now 9 o'clock. So I shot him at 6 o'clock on the dot.
So this going through, PM. like when you do this, going through your head, are you like thinking about last year, like all that shit that happened?
Oh, dude, I don't even know what to think at this point, because I literally have put so much blood, sweat, and tears into this. And it like, I tried describing to my wife, archery hunting is so hard because it doesn't matter how bad you want it. That deer is playing a game of life, and it could give two shits less about your goals.
Exactly. Like that's such a great statement, man.
It is.
That's such a great statement.
They don't care. Like, I could pick any other passion or hobby, running an ultra marathon. Like, I know if I do X, Y, and Z, I will get the result that I, you know, or get close to the result I want. I can complete this marathon. I can complete this financial goal. Everything I want, I can complete. But with deer hunting, big old deer like this, like, dude, I'm sure there are guys out there that have grinded their entire lives and have never hit that goal.
Yeah.
Like,
well, absolutely.
100%.
They're playing a game of life.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what to think at this point. They get up there. And what I see in my shot. So.
Damn, hold on a second. I want to reflect on like what you just said. That has like such deeper meaning, like to what
it's a
even
huge meaning.
If you don't have experience in bow hunting, you might not be able to wrap your head around that. But the way you worded all that was such a good way of explaining like this, like kind of sometimes. Well, it's almost sometimes impossible to accomplish. In your own head. Yeah. Because, yeah, like you said, no matter how bad you set your mind to something.
And how bad you want it.
Yeah, no matter how bad you want it. If you're a little off, that deer just wants to live. So if you fuck up even in a minute percentage of what you think you should or shouldn't be doing, that deer is going to capitalize on that and then get away.
Like, yeah, like you said, when he went to grab his bow, like if he caught a glimpse of it.
The deer's gone.
Not even that, being within that close. I mean, I don't know what kind of stand you're in, obviously, but not even know that you were there? That's crazy. I mean, he's 2 yards from under the tree. The simple creek.
I was running in Ozonix, and it's something I feel like there's so many pivotal moments, but I have a good friend that I just so happened to run into at the trailhead one day, and I was like, hey, dude, you run in Ozonix. Like, I remember him telling me about it on a bear hunt that he did, And he's like, oh, dude, I've got two of them. Like, let's meet up tomorrow morning and you can borrow mine. And this is like a couple days before the hunt. I tried to buy one of those too, and I couldn't find one. I ended up finding out that they're direct to consumer, which is kind of lame, but, well, for me, needing one in a pinch, but, I had talked to a bunch of other guys and they were like, don't worry about getting one of those. Like, you'll be fine. You're high enough up the tree. You're this, that, and the other. But I also wondered, dude, did that make a difference?
Could have.
That may have been the difference.
When
I don't know.
That close, it probably.
You never know.
Yeah. Did, yeah.
But I mean, 2 yards, that's nuts. You know what I mean?
Crazy.
Oh. Yeah.
I just like the way you worded that, like, you know.
That quote needs to be wrote down and put on a t-shirt.
Yeah. No, it was good. I like that a lot. It just shows your appreciation for the situation.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Which is, it bums me out when people don't know what's going on. Like, don't have an appreciation for, like, the deal of what's in front of you.
Well, I think it's cool because it's like, this is meant to be. The whole story is meant to be.
Yeah.
Like, how many ups and downs you've had, this is meant to be 100%.
But you've also created this, like, your own recipe to what it ended up being of success, you know, like, if a lazy person would not have had this opportunity.
Well, you changed phone service.
Yeah, right.
To do this.
Yeah. Like, to kill this buck.
You did every single thing you could do to make it happen.
Right.
There was no step I wasn't willing to take to, you know, at that point I'm pot committed.
Yeah.
I'm doing whatever it takes.
Says a lot, man. So, there's a lot of people who complain that aren't in it like you are.
Absolutely.
That complain they don't kill deer like that, but it takes a certain level of commitment to be successful like this.
Absolutely. So I hit this deer as he's quartering away, hard quartering. Well, I don't even know he was quartering away. We'll just say that. And I hit him about second to last rib. And it looked like my arrow was angled to come out in the opposite side shoulder, the front shoulder.
What you want.
But my elevation, I was like, I hit like dead center, mid elevation on his body. And I thought, that might be a little low for, you know, shooting out of a tree stand. So but other than that, I'm like, dude, I got, you know, I probably got some guts, liver,
lung. You're still catching something there.
Oh, I'm punching through a bunch of stuff. So I tell these buddies that they get up there. We jump on the blood trail. It's now 9 o'clock. It's been 3 hours and we start out going and I can like right out of the gate. The first thing that stands out is he's bleeding on both sides of the trail. I've got blood on the left and the right of the trail. So,
beautiful.
Although I didn't get a pass through, I could see like 8 inches of my arrow sticking out. I did poke out the other side.
That's a pass through, brother. That's a pass through.
Absolutely.
Right. So we start out this trail and he starts out going like straight side hill. So we go like 200 yards of straight side hill and there's blood everywhere, dude. There's blood all over the Quakies. There's, you know, that he's pumping. He's clearly, it's pressurized blood. Once again, Hank and James start the high five in, you know, congrats, like, all pumped up, and I've been the rounds with this deer, dude. Nothing's gonna shock me at this point. Like, I don't even want to get excited.
Right. You don't want to jinx yourself before it happens.
Yeah. So, and it's really bright red blood. It looks good. But we go 200 yards, and the deer turns and starts going straight downhill, which is, you know, it's a good sign that he's going down and not up.
Right.
But as soon as he turns to go downhill, the blood turns to like a really dark, almost black blood, which I'm like, okay, that's liver blood, which I figured I had caught his liver.
Yeah. From the entry.
Yep. From the entry. So, it gets to the point where we're looking at like pin drops. I mean, he is like not bleeding going downhill. Mm. We hit a couple spots where we would be down on our hands and knees for like an hour gritting around this one pin drop. Like, where does the blood trail go from here? Hank forgot his headlamp at home. Mine died, so I'm on my backup headlamp. James Yates has a really good headlamp, but, you know, that's one person out of the three of us that has a good headlamp at this point. And somehow Hank, with his freaking using his iPhone light, would holler out, got blood, and he's like 75 yards downhill, and all of a sudden we're back on blood. And so we'd start following the blood again, and he's still just dumping straight downhill. And then we would run out of blood again. And we were back on our hands and knees for 45 minutes. So you fast forward a little bit, and we're in the bottom of this canyon. And it's like a flat bottom. And it's now well after midnight. We've been blood trailing for over 3 hours. We're on pin drops. I'm like ready to throw up. Just like, I'm having flashbacks at this point, like just disturbed. We hit a spot where this deer crosses a meadow, and it's like 3 foot tall grass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh no, dude, this is going to be a nightmare to like find where he crosses meadow. And so we're sitting there in that meadow, and now it's 2:30 a.m. And
oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. It's, dude, it's been so slow since he turned and started going downhill.
So what time did you shoot him?
6 o'clock. Started on the blood trail at 9 o'clock. So now we're 5.5 hours after we started blood trailing.
Damn.
And all of, I mean, there's a bunch of things that check off the list. This is all, it's all dried blood. So we know we're not bumping him out of his bed. But one thing I can't get out of my head is, like, that arrow should have gone right through his liver. And I don't know about whitetail, but liver-punched deer normally don't go more than 200 yards without bedding up.
Yeah, I know so, that typically to be the case, too, for whitetails.
I'm like, how is this deer not bedded up once? How is he still going? And this was all done, you know, almost immediately after I hit him because it's all dry. And so we're down at this meadow and, like, 45 minutes goes by being in this meadow, and I tell the guys, I'm like, guys, it's freaking 2 o'clock, like, I'm spent, I haven't eaten anything all day, like, let's just wrap this up, I'll come up again in the morning and pick up on last blood.
And you still don't have your arrow yet or anything, right?
No, it's in him, yeah.
It's still in him.
It's still in him, and so, you know, James and Hank are like, they're like, dude, we neither of them, because of work obligations, neither of them could come back up the next day to help me.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, that's fine. And so they wanted to keep looking. So we keep looking over this meadow. Another half hour goes by, and I'm like, guys, seriously, let's pull the ripcord for tonight. You know, now it's 2:30. Now that the second time I tell them, it's 2:30, and I'm like, guys, let's call it for the night. And they're kind of reluctant. And on the other side of this meadow, there's a band of Quakies that's like 50 yards wide. So a strip of trees 50 yards wide. Below that is the main trail. And so it would have been easier just to bushwhack and head straight down to the trail, like kind of cutting off to the left. But James and Hank, reluctant to leave because they knew they couldn't come back up and they wanted to be there for the recovery. James goes, well, let's do this. Let's go down to those Quakies right there. Let's get 50 yards apart. We'll grid through those Quakies and then we'll catch the main trail and hike out. So I'm like, okay,
call it a night after that.
Sounds good. Yep. So we get 50 yards apart. I'm on the far left, Hank's in the middle, and James is on the far right. Literally the second we hit the Quakey line, I hear James, whoa, like start just screaming. And I'm like, I'm confused. I'm delirious at this point.
Like,
and
did he find blood? Did he find the deer? Like, what's going on?
Like, what's going on?
And what time is this again?
2:30 a.m.
Okay.
So I see Hank, like, kind of start to trot towards James. And so I start moving that direction. And as I get closer, I'm like 50 yards out from him now. And I can hear James, he's a giant. He's a giant. And I'm like, no freaking way.
Did,
like,
you start sprinting?
I start sprinting at that point. I get over there and he's piled up, not bedded and died. He's piled, so that deer literally did a death march almost 600 yards and piled up. Dead as a doornail, all riggered up at this point, and I'm in, like, complete disbelief over what, like, I'm not kidding. I was having flashbacks in my head of last year, what he had done to me last year.
Oh, I can imagine, man. You had perfect reason to.
And in that process, I'm starting to second guess everything. Like, well, did I really hit where I think I hit? Like, you're trying to remember when you took the shot, but it seems so foggy because of the adrenaline rush that I'm like, that's what I told you when it right happened. So I'm going to stick to it that's where I hit him. And sure enough, that's exactly where I hit him. Mid body for elevation, second rib from the back, and it exited right down in his armpit on the offside.
Damn.
Well, and that just goes to show these animals, like, their sole purpose is to survive.
Yeah.
Yep.
even with a heart, an arrow through his liver, lungs, right out the moneymaker, he's still going to run 600 yards downhill.
He's trying That's crazy. Make it and stay alive is what he's doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just instinct at that point.
It's crazy.
So we figured, you know, I had figured this deer, if he was 3.5 the first year I saw him in 2016, it would mean he's 7.5 this year. So he's at least 7. He's an old, freaking weary deer. Like, he just, and I'm sure he had flashbacks of being hit the year prior, you know?
He's like, not this again.
Yeah, not this. Oh, yeah. No. Not this guy again.
I'm sure this felt a little different this time.
Yeah. So he, you know, we find him piled up down in that meadow. We get him all taken care of. By the time I end up getting home, I get in bed at 5:30 a.m. I sleep to 7:30 a.m. and then wake up so that I can take him to the taxidermist, the meat to the butcher. You know, I had a pile of gear up on them. I had 7 game cameras I had to pull over the next, you know, the next day. 7 game cameras. Tree stand, camp, all my gear. It was a lot of work, but dude, I'm
do it all over again.
Still, oh yeah, just like could not believe that it all came together.
Congratulations, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Let's talk about this buck, man. Like, let's give me some stats here, because this thing has to. This, I mean, we know whitetails, right? Like, there's the super giant whitetails. There's like your average whitetails, the 130s, 140s. Mm-hmm. But mule deer for a Midwestern guy can be a whole nother just experience of just seeing like the width, the beams, the timing.
Like, I've shot a mule deer and I still don't understand that.
I've shot a mule deer too, and so have you, Doug. Yeah. But we've all shot like the. What would be considered small?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
If you will.
Yeah.
Well, even my full-range system, my, like, 140 buck, and then, like, I don't know what we don't know what we scored that mule deer at. It still looks almost bigger, though, like, the way they just come out. Yeah. And
I don't have that with my mule deer. But it wouldn't change it, though.
It looks so much different. I see whitetails, too, and I'm like, what? That thing's that looks like it's 120. How's that 160? Like, it looks tiny, but.
Yeah.
They're so different.
They just hold their frame different.
I'm going to Utah next fall, brother. Different. I'm coming out there.
Oh, you better. Yeah, you need to come out here.
I'm coming. I've been building points for a long time. I'm going.
Totally different experience. Your buddy Clint, he's hooked on it, dude. He's out here just glassing for Devin this week.
I'm coming with that motherfucker next fall. And I'm coming out. I don't care if he goes with Devin, they're butt buddies. Me and you are about to be butt
buddies. Fuck them, yeah. You and Ty,
me and Ty, Clint and Devin. We're gonna have a face off.
Yeah, you and Tree Stand too. There you go.
We should do that. We should do a podcast. Clint and Devin versus Kurt and Ty.
Let's do it.
I'll be the ref. I'm here.
Yeah, you'll be the moderator.
The moderator. Yep.
He's got Doug and Eric who don't know what the fuck they're doing.
No.
Talk about the experience of, like, grabbing this buck. Like, you recover him, you grab the antlers. Like, give me that whole, like, breakdown mentally.
Oh, man, I can't even really put it into words, or I don't feel like maybe words would even do it justice to take a buck that you've watched for 4 years, you put an arrow in it, you're, like, all the sacrifices that I've made, my wife and kids have made, you know, I couldn't even. Yeah, the poor AT&T got cut out of the picture so that I could kill this deer.
Fuck him.
He ended up growing on the ground. I had figured, I thought he was right in that scope of 38 to 40 inches wide, based on all the, you know, the pictures I had, everything like that. And 40, the deer ended up being 38 inches wide outside spread. What ended up being the hang up and what I missed was on his right ear. If you look in the trail camera photos that I posted on Instagram, he had gotten frostbite, or that's what, you know, the taxidermist and I assume, on his right ear. He's missing about an inch and a half off the tip of his right ear. And, you know, had he had that and I was basing it off of his ears, he would have been, you know, 40 inches wide, but his ears weren't as wide as I was thinking they were, so he's 38 inches wide. I had figured him to be high 180s. I figured he might touch 190 inches, but I thought he was like in that 185 to 190. He ended up taping out at 195.
Nice.
Damn.
He had almost 40 inches of mass. It was his G2s that kind of cut down on that score. He had a 31.5-inch inside spread, which does go into score.
That's insane.
He had 30-inch main beams, which is
stud.
I mean, just stupid long. Like, you hear 25, 26-inch main beams on a mule deer, and you're like, that's a giant. That's got good beams.
I would say with a whitetail, from just being a measure, 24-inch beams on a whitetail is when they start getting high scores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so it's really similar with mule deer then. That's when you start noticing. Like, I've killed a couple other bucks that are, you know, like 170-type bucks that I'm scoring them, and I'm like, oh, man, what did I miss? Like, this isn't scoring as high as I thought, and then you pull the main beams, and they're like 21 inches, and you're like, well,
there it is.
Flip, yeah. You know?
Yep,
there it is.
There's a lot of big bucks that got that 20 to 22 beams, but when you start getting them in that 24 beams plus, that you get some big boys.
For sure.
And that's like literally exactly like mule deer. So he had 30-inch main beams. It's hard to see in the pictures, but he's got three scorable eye guards on one side and two scorable eye guards on the other side.
Oh, cool.
He had those two inlines. One of them's like a 6-inch inline. The other one's a 4-inch inline on his right side. He's just, dude, he's so big. Like, I, the pictures don't even remotely do it justice. I've talked to a couple buddies since that are like, oh, dude, they've called me up and they want to hear the story. And they're like, what is that? Like a 180 buck? And I'm like, no, it's actually 195. And they're like, what? And that they start asking some of the other measurements and they're like, holy shit, is that deer? You know, and then obviously the buddies that have seen him firsthand are like, holy cow, dude, that thing is, he's just so wide. That's crazy awesome.
He looks insane.
Yep.
The cover art of this episode is like so clickable because you just see this giant.
I just love the way mule deer look. It's just,
well, and it's,
they're cool. Crazy. There's something about them.
It was probably one of the biggest mule deer bodies I've ever been on too, because when we had to move him like 5 feet to get a good little spot to take some field photos, and I told Hank, I'm like, grab him by the ears and you just keep the head from dragging on the ground. I'll grab all four legs and we'll just kind of move him over like 5 feet. And we go to lift and we can't even move the deer. And James is kind of like shuffling through his pack. I'm like, James, we need your help. And so he comes over and he had to grab the front two legs. I had the back legs, and then Hank had the ears just to move him like 5 feet. It was like, what in the hell?
No kidding.
Oh, dude, he was so big bodied. And then, you know, of course, when I get him down to the taxidermist, he's pulling measurements on the deer's face. Like, I don't even know what measurements they were, but from like the eyes to the nose and between the eyes. And he's like, dude, this is one of the biggest deer heads that I've seen in a long time. Like, this thing is, he's like, it's going to have to go on the biggest form I can order for mule deer.
No damn, kidding.
Which is awesome.
Just, I mean, an old freaking troll of a deer.
And this is your biggest mule to date, right?
Yeah. Yep. Highest scoring and just, you know, I don't think I'll ever, they normally just don't get that wide without, you know, kickers, or a lot of the bucks that you see in the high 30s, they've got like matching kickers coming off both sides, or, you know, something funky about them, but.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
It's almost like crazy. The biggest typical type whitetail rack you could get.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, and he looks, I think he looks like a whitetail. I don't know. You know, if you guys being whitetail guys, if it, you'd probably still look at it and be like, no, that's a mule deer. But
I know I see the mule deer, but when you say like that whitetail comparison, like I understand what you mean.
Yeah. I noticed when I saw the picture, I saw that.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, Wade? Like, you can see whitetail esque frame to him, but he's mule deer scale.
Yeah. But the gray face, like right away, you're like, I can see it.
It, dude, they're just, it's cool to us. Like, have you ever killed a whitetail, Ty?
Nope.
You got to get out here, man. Like, you know, we talked in camp. I want to get you. I want to get Easton. I want to get Trey out here. I want to get Devin out here. Like, you guys need to come out here, man. It'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be a riot.
They're just not, whitetails just aren't as framey. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are limited to time. So, like, your just opportunity would be limited. But, you know,
right?
They're here, you know?
They're out here.
I need to get out there. I need to chase whitetail.
You already used the true stands.
We'll chat, brother. We'll chat, because I got Utah points that I've been itching to use, and I think next fall is my time. And I think maybe after that you ought to come to the studio. record some podcasts. You can stay at the studio, and we'll chase some whitetails.
I think me and Eric might have to apply for some Utah points, huh?
You guys haven't been?
Yeah.
Have you, Eric?
I don't think so. I don't think Utah.
I think I got five.
Wyoming.
I got five muleys, five elk, and two antelope points in Utah.
Oh, damn.
Damn.
Town.
I've been trying, just man.
To cash in.
Trying to
collecting points.
I'm trying to hustle out here, you know.
It is what it is.
But we'll do a it's team curtain tie. Yeah, Devin and Clint, you know, I've been saying it. They can go fuck themselves. Ever since this episode.
Wait, you started.
Hey, it's Kurt and Ty right here. What's up?
What's up?
They don't want this tree stand mule deer smoke. You
know? They ain't ready for it.
I don't really mean that because I think Devin's a great dude and Clint, you know, he's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Clint's
but
all right.
No, they're good
I
dudes.
I meant Devin, but Clint.
Can you imagine the mule deer camp, though?
Oh, dude, that'd be so fun.
And then you guys need – we need to get Clint to come to Illinois and figure some shit out and then have you guys come here. That way we can do a whitetail camp with everyone together.
Just everybody.
The bad thing about it is, like, I'm the only host now in Illinois. Eric and Doug are Iowa. Like, you have to apply for points in Iowa, and you get every 3 years.
Well, we can come over here and hunt.
Yeah, you can. That's the cool thing about it. So we technically all could share camp in Illinois.
Deer?
Illinois, for sure.
That's a lie.
Well, that's a lie, but Illinois is the easiest, so we'll just go with that, I guess.
Start applying for Iowa, and we'll have you out.
Who just set the world record? What
up?
Oh,
snap.
Some guy from Virginia.
Illinois Bucks. It is easier to hunt Illinois, but we'll talk. We'll talk for sure. But,
heck yeah.
Dude, congratulations. That's an amazing buck. Awesome.
Congrats, dude.
Good for you.
I'm glad we able – our schedules just worked, and we were able to fit this podcast in. Like, I mean, how long ago – time of recording, how many days has it been since you shot this buck?
It's Wednesday, so we're coming up on a week.
A week.
So as quick as we could do it, man. So
yeah, and I was super – for a couple days there, I was super busy, you know, making a bunch of trips in there to shuttle out all my – pull all my game cameras and all that kind of crap. So I was, and I was running on sleep deprivation. So
I still had to feel kind of good though, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a good kind of like
work. A good cleanup.
It got dark there for a minute on that blood trail. Like, you know, the, like I said, heard all those flashbacks of what happened last year. I was,
yeah.
I told those guys, I'm like, dude, if I don't find this deer, my crap's going on the online classifieds and I'm hanging up my bow.
I can imagine, man. Like, oh yeah, if you've been bow hunting long enough, you know that feeling. You get to that certain point on that blood trail, and it's "Hello, darkness, my old friend."
Yeah. And then you always got your like, if that's you, and then you got your buddies like, "Oh no, we're good, we're fine, we'll
you're
find
fine,
him.
Bro."
Yeah,
that's exactly what they kept saying. That's exactly. What
but in your head, you're like, "Fuck off!" Like, I'm fucked.
Who picks a passion and a hobby and dumps everything they have into it just to get kicked in the nuts?
Exactly,
twice?
Yeah.
Not football fans.
That's true.
That's totally true. Yeah.
Sorry, football fans. But listen, what are you crying because your team lost?
Yeah.
Suck it up. Mop up your feelings. Chase a giant mule deer.
Yeah.
You know?
2 years in a row.
It's crazy, man. I congratulate you. You're a real OG.
Thanks,
guys. You put the work in. Man. You are a calculated individual. I know you'd never say that about yourself, but this podcast, I think, showed that with all the work you're willing to put in, the sacrifices you make. Killing big deer don't come without sacrifice.
Dude,
remember that.
Right.
For sure.
Well, cool, man. Hey, where can people find you? And if they want to see – I mean, of course, like the cover art, and we're going to post pictures of this deer. But if they want to see you and your social media, where can people find you?
Ty.Glenn. GLENN on Instagram. That's about it.
Very cool. Thank you so much. And if you want to book a bear hunt and go hunting with Eric, myself, Ty Glenn, Clint Casper, Devin, and the rest of the listeners that have already booked their bear hunt for next spring at Double Diamond Outfitters in western Wyoming, you can contact us. Hit us up. Email us, workingclassbowhunter@gmail.com, and we'll set you up. Wade might be buying a spot.
I'm doing it.
Okay, there's one spot left.
Spot left.
Too late now, guys. Once it's actually tomorrow, you're already done.
You gotta do it,
Wade. Checks wrote.
I promise you would not regret it.
So much fun. So much fun.
You'll be on a horse, Wade, and Ty will slap it in the ass.
Dude, you used to ride horses all the time. Look at me.
I'm
the biggest badass white boy on a horse you'd ever seen in your life.
Stallion from Iowa.
Stallion Air, baby, right here.
So we got one spot left for the bear hunt. I think that is on week 2 is filled.
if Wade books week three, week three is filled. So there's one spot left on week one.
Get in there and get them before.
But Eric and I will not be there. We'll be there. We're overlapping week two and three. Yep. So we get to spend time with both camps with listeners. But I would imagine Devin and Ty, are you going to be there the whole time, the 2 weeks?
I'll probably come out. I'll probably do it like you're doing it. I'll probably
overlap.
Plan to hit the middle of week two through the middle of week three.
Cool. So you'll probably show up the same time Eric and I show up. And so cool. So
can't wait, man.
We'll book it out. If you're interested in doing that hunt, I think there's one spot left. Wade already claimed one spot. So we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Damn. There it is, man. Thank you so much for doing the show last second, and congratulations on a buck of a lifetime.
Huge congrats.
Thanks for having me on.
Awesome Super story.
To share the story.
Very cool. All right, guys. There it is. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.